What do you see in the mirror? Title of the message is, What Do I See in the Mirror? What do you see when you look in the mirror? Well, in a physical mirror, if you look in the mirror, you might see some things that you don't like. Maybe there's a little extra body weight there that you wish would disappear. Maybe there's a receding hairline that you wish wouldn't be receding quite so quick. Or maybe it's gray hair or wrinkles that keep showing up. Or maybe there's some part of you that, maybe it's your big nose or big ears or you wish was different. You look in the mirror and you see something that you don't really like. But as you sit here without a mirror in front of you and you think about yourself, what image do you see in your mind of who you are? And how should you view yourself? And do you have a proper view of yourself? As we look into the mirror, there are three basic ways that we can see ourselves. And I have little pictures here that I would like to, I'm going to tape up on the board behind me. One of the ways that we can view ourselves is we can have a superior self-image. Where we look in the mirror, and this may be a little difficult for you to see in the back, but here we have a cat looking in the mirror, and he sees himself as this big lion. Okay, so that's one way that we can see ourselves. Where we have a superior self-image, we think we're bigger and better than what we really are. Where we view ourselves, or people with a superior self-image, those type of people are often arrogant. And it doesn't take too long when you're around someone like that that you realize that they have an elevated opinion of themselves. They tend to disregard the concerns and opinions and desires and feelings of others. So this is one view that we can have. Another view that we can have is an inferior self-image. Here you have a lion looking in the mirror and he sees himself as a little cat. Where we view ourselves as smaller than what we really are, or maybe more worthless than what we really are. And these type of people, they tend to have negative opinions about themselves. They tend to be incompetent. They tend to think that they're unworthy. They tend to feel very inferior towards other people and those around them. Now there's another view that we can have of ourselves, and that is a biblical or proper self-view, where if you're a cat this morning, and you look in the mirror, you see a cat. Or if you're a lion, you look in the mirror and you see a lion. Now, I know that I don't believe that you can be what you think you might are. Unfortunately, we have those type of people in the world that identify themselves as a cat or a lion or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about, how do you view yourself? Do you see yourself properly? Where we view ourselves as God sees us, and where we view ourselves as we really are. Where we acknowledge our weaknesses and our strengths. And as you observe people around you, you're going to see all three of these types of people. And I would imagine in a group this size, you all know each other better than what I know you. There's some people might come to mind that maybe you'd put them in this category, or this category, or maybe in the other category, or people you work with. It's interesting, we've been involved with Bible school for quite a number of years. When you get that amount of young people, that first week everyone gets there and you're trying to learn to know people, and by the end of the first week, everyone pretty much has everyone else figured out. And we can start identifying those who have a superior self-image, those who have an inferior self-image, And then there's ones that seem to view themselves about right. There are a lot of things that contribute to what our self-image is. And so tonight, this morning, how can we know if we have a biblical self-image? So we want to take a biblical balanced look at what this should look like. There is this battle between these two views of we need to be careful. We need to be, maybe I should have put that one in the middle because the other two are sort of like a ditch on either side of the road. There is a push of a humanistic view of self-image. And if you do some studying into that, it seems like in the mid to late 20th century into the early 21st century, there was a big push among psychologists and counselors to have a positive self-image of yourself. And I would say this is something that maybe it's not being pushed quite as much as what it was back then, I'm not sure, but it's still alive today, where there's this push to have this positive self-image. It was taught in schools, it was taught in business seminars, and in many nominal churches is where this is taught, where you view yourself as positive. And it's a very humanistic view about the need for people to believe in themselves, to care for themselves, and to gain self-esteem. And the thought that with enough self-esteem, we can pretty much overcome any problem. And if you want to succeed, then you look in the mirror and you tell yourself that you can do it and believe in yourself. And I went to a number of years back, went to a trade show that was put on by one of our vendors. And one of their top salesmen gave a talk. And one of the things that he told us is you should always be early. Leave in plenty of time so you're not late. And also leave in plenty of time so that when you're just down the road, find the place to pull over and you go over your notes, you get all ready, and you look yourself in the mirror, in that rearview mirror. You look yourself in the mirror and you point at yourself and you say, "You are great, you are great, you are great." Say it three times to yourself. And that will build self-confidence and you'll go in there and you can sell it. That increases your chance of selling. That's what he told this crowd of hundreds of people. The thought is that man's greatest problem is a deep-rooted sense of inferiority. And you could try to support that, churches could try to support that with Bible verses like Philippians 4:13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." And when you put too much emphasis on I and me, you can take verses like that out of context to try to support a viewpoint like that. There's also a push against this humanistic view of self-image during that time. There was a push among some Christians that the Bible does not teach self-esteem. It does not teach self-love. It doesn't teach having a self-image. And that, I quote, "The Bible does not teach us to be satisfied with ourselves as we are, but to destroy any satisfaction that may exist." The counselor J. Adams said this, "You must treat yourself like a criminal and put self to death every day." Is that a better view? Is that a proper view? Maybe it's a little better, but maybe now we're starting to go too far off the other side. We need, is it true that God doesn't want us to be satisfied with ourselves as we are? I don't believe that's true. So this morning we need to have a biblical view of ourselves. And there is some truth to some of the things of both of these views that we just talked about. There's a little bit of truth in both of them. Having a positive outlook going into things, I believe, is good and right. If we just have a negative outlook going into things, I don't think that's the right way to go about life. I think there's a reason that we should have a positive outlook. And we should be positive. But we don't turn to our inner man for that strength. And we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And the focus is on God. The focus is on Christ that gives us strength, and we rely on Him. And the truth is that we do need to crucify our flesh. We've been talking about that this week. We need to crucify our flesh every day. It's a daily experience that we need to crucify the flesh. That is very true. But does that mean that we have no self-image? So I want to look at some biblical principles about self-image. And I also, as I preach this message, I realize that in a group like this, including myself, there are those that may have a tendency towards a superior self-image, that think too much of themselves. And in the same audience, listening to the same sermon, there are probably some that have an inferior self-image, which makes it a little difficult to know how to approach a subject like this. But if we can study the scripture, I trust that regardless of which side of the ditch you may be on this morning, we can both look towards a biblical view. So, what are some biblical principles, or how can we have a biblical view of self? Number one, open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Here we have some familiar verses here. You know this is the creation story. I'd like to read Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image, and in the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and said unto them, "Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." Jump down to verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, which includes you and I, includes mankind. And behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So the first principle I want us to see here is that God created us with value and significance. Mankind was created with value and significance. The Bible affirms that every person is valuable to him. We can see that all throughout Scripture. And there is value in us not because of what I think of myself, not of what I have accomplished, not of what you have accomplished, or what you have done, but in the very fact that we were created by God. We looked at Psalm 8 this morning. Brother Darrell read Psalm 8. And we see how we are wonderfully made. And we looked at that in our little lesson this morning. And this is a humbling thought, that the King of Kings, the creator of the universe, that is far above all of us, finds value in mortal beings. These little beings of dust that are walking on this earth that he created, and this earth that seems so small in light of the universe and all everything else that God created. And that he values us as mortal beings, and not only that, but he created us in his image. That gives you value this morning. That you were created by God and you're created in his image. And he gave us dominion over his creation. That speaks of responsibility and it speaks of value. We have intellectual abilities, the capacity to communicate, the freedom to make choices, a knowledge of right and wrong. That speaks of value. God created us because he desired to have communion with us. That alone speaks of value. You have value because you are created for the purpose of communing with God. He wasn't just doing a science experiment. He created you with purpose. And in Genesis, we see God walking through the garden to communicate with Adam and Eve. If we keep reading here, we see how there was this communion with God. So how should this fact affect our self-image? We should not view ourselves as a worthless, good-for-nothing, can I say, piece of trash. That's not how we should view ourselves. God created each of us, and we shouldn't be ashamed of that. And it should humble us at the same time that the King of Kings created us in his image. Number two, the second thing I want to think about this morning is that sin does not alter God's purpose and will for us. Through Adam, sin entered the world. We looked at that this week, earlier this week, and now we're all born sinners. We understand that. We are sinners. Mankind was alienated from God, and we are condemned to die. Sin was and is rebellion against God, doubting his word and his truth. And you know what? When we have sin in our lives, it will affect our self-image. It will affect how we view ourselves. Sin leads to interpersonal conflicts. Sin can lead to self-justification, where we try to fix our own problems, to make things better for ourselves. Sin tends to blame others for our weaknesses and failures. And if we can blame someone else for our problems, it then helps my self-image. That's one of the reasons that we do that, I believe. That's why we try to blame other people for our problems, because our self-image is affected by our sin. Sin can lead to verbal and physical abuse. Sin produces guilt, which also results in a low self-image. And there's an aspect, we talked about this the other night, there's an aspect where guilt is good. I'm glad that we have guilt. We all need to get to the place where we realize we can't fix ourselves. But Satan likes to take this for his advantage. And if a Christian is struggling, or if he fails in his Christian life in an area, Satan likes to make us feel like we are worthless pieces of trash and God doesn't want to bother with us. And that's how we are viewed in the sight of God. That is how Satan wants to get us to feel. But God does not see the sinner as trash. He sees value in the sinner. He looks past the sin to a heart, to a soul that has potential. Look at Paul, for example, and many others, where they failed, but there was value. God saw value in them. Sin breaks our relationship with God, but in God's eyes, we are still his creatures, created in his likeness to have dominion over the earth, and to have a relationship with him. Sin does not change the purpose of why you and I were created. So how does this affect our self-image? There is no one that God doesn't love, regardless of what we have done. The greater the sin, the greater the grace. We talked about redemption. We talked about that adding machine where you add up all your sin, and then you have another adding machine that adds up the grace of God. And the worse our sin, the more sin we have, the more grace we have. And if you're a Christian that is struggling or failing in an area, look at yourself for who you really are. And as long as you struggle alone, Satan will try to discourage you and say you're worthless. And it's much better to confess it, talk to someone, and you can find purpose in life again. We need to understand that sin affects my self-image, but we also need to remember that God finds value in us, even in our sin. He looks past the sin to a person that he created for the purpose of having a relationship with you. Number three, I'd like to talk about pride, humility, and self-image. What is pride? I think we have a decent handle on what pride is, a decent concept of what pride is. Maybe we don't see it in ourselves always like we should, but we understand what pride is. Pride is lifting ourselves up to receive glory that is rightfully God's. Satan said this in Isaiah when he rebelled against God, he was a created angel that rebelled against God, and he said this, "I will exalt my throne above the stars of God." He said, "I will be like the Most High." He elevates himself. And it is seeing ourselves bigger and stronger than what we really are. In the opening, we said that pride is an exaggerated, arrogant self-image that tends to disregard others' opinions, feelings, and concerns. So what is humility? And I want to be biblical with what humility is. I think sometimes we misinterpret what humility is. Is humility and an inferior self-image synonymous? I don't think it is, but I'm afraid that sometimes we lump the two together. We look at this, a inferior self-image, and say, that's humility. But I don't believe that is true humility. Matthew 11:29 says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." Humbleness is meekness towards others. That is what humility is. Humbleness is not having a heart that is lifted up against God, as what Satan did, but it's in humility, having meek, preferring others before ourselves. Turn to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. Look at verse 7 and 8. This is speaking about God, kind of breaking into the middle of a sentence here. Verse 6 ends with, speaking of Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. You see, humility affects our reputation. Humility affects our reputation. Not necessarily a bad reputation, that's not what I'm talking about, but a meek reputation. Jesus made himself of no reputation. He wasn't concerned about flaunting that he was God, but he was God, but he made himself of no reputation. Humbleness is serving others. Jesus showed this by washing his disciples' feet. Jesus came here in the form of a servant, and he served his creation. Humbleness is obedience to God. And so we see this here in the life of Jesus, where he obeyed. He became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. This is what humility looks like. If you want to see humility, look at the life of Jesus, and you can study the life of Jesus, and you see it all throughout his life. So how do we bring these two together, this pride, this view of pride and humility, to have a biblical self-image? I believe that we need to accept our imperfections. We need to accept our sins and our failures and our weaknesses. Too often we try to cover them up because of our self-image, but we need to be real with them. We need to accept them. We need to humbly acknowledge our God-given gifts and abilities. God has blessed you with gifts and abilities maybe that other people don't have, and we need to humbly acknowledge that. It's not pride to acknowledge the gifts that God has given you. We should not reject or downplay our God-given strengths and abilities. Neither should we use them for our glory and for our benefit, but rather use our gifts and abilities to serve others and to serve God in meekness. We need to acknowledge that I might be better at catching mice than what you are. You know, lions, I don't think, do very good at catching mice. We might have some cats here. You understand what I'm saying? And cats are better at catching mice. But when it comes out to being the king of the jungle, forget the cat. The lion does much better at that. And the cat and the lion are going to get along much better if they both accept their gifts and abilities in the way God created them. But if a lion tries to act like a cat and a cat tries to act like a lion, it doesn't work. Now apply that to your life. Apply that to this congregation. What gifts and abilities do you have? If you try to act like someone else and try to take their gifts and abilities and try to be like them and not yourself, it's not going to work. So humbly accept your gifts and abilities and use them to serve others and to serve God. we must recognize and embrace and use our God-given gifts and abilities. Number four, we want to have a biblical view. We need to have a biblical view of self-love. To have a proper self-image, we need to have a biblical view of self-love. You know, the Bible assumes that we love ourselves. And you do. I will guarantee you that you love yourself. And I want to be careful and clear with this point. But you do love yourself, and I love myself. Matthew 22:39 says, "Thou shalt love thy neighbor, how? As thyself." Ephesians 5:28-29, "So ought men to love their wives." Men, you're supposed to love your wife as their own bodies. "He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it." You see, we do love ourselves. We take care of ourselves. When you're tired, most times you rest. At least you want to. And you rest when you can. When you get hungry, you like to feed yourself. We like to take care. When something hurts, we fix it. We love ourselves. Nowhere does the Bible promote self-love that I can see, but it assumes it. It assumes self-love. And we as preachers tend to shy away from teaching that the Bible assumes self-love because we so naturally love ourselves, and we don't need to teach our people to love self because it comes natural. But we need to understand that we do love ourselves. We tend to pamper ourselves maybe even too much, thinking that we need the best. So we need to push against the other way. But it's a God-given gift that we have tendencies towards self-love. And if you study non-resistance, in the non-resistance class at Bible school, we talk about our tendency towards self-preservation. That is built within us to preserve self. That's another expression of self-love. And by nature, we care for our bodies and tend to our needs and our wounds. But see, the problem is Satan takes what God wired in us to love self, and he destroys it. And he takes it out of context, and he uses it for wrong. And that's where the problem comes in. In self-preservation, he wants us to violate scriptures to protect ourselves. In self-love, he wants us to violate scripture to exalt self higher than what it should be. But we need to have a biblical view of self and humility and some of the things we talked about. So what are some things that affect our self-image? And we're not going to go over everything, but just some things to think about. Some things that affect our self-image are poor people tend to have a low self-image versus rich people tend to have a high self-image. So your bank account will tend to affect your self-image. Physical deficiencies, like a handicap, or maybe I talked about some unattractive features. Maybe you don't like your big nose or your big ears or whatever it is. If there's something like that, you will tend to struggle more with a low self-image. Whereas if you're very attractive and athletic, we tend to have a higher self-image of ourselves than what we should. They say that those in minority groups tend to have a low self-image versus majority groups tend to have a high self-image. And there are other things that affect it as well. We spent a lot of time talking about this already, but how we view sin and creation affects us. And there is a difference between crucifying the flesh and having a healthy self-image. We need to understand the difference. We need to crucify our self-ambition, our personal gratification, our self-centeredness, our self-affirming lives. We must not deny our God-given gifts and abilities. And I quote from a commentary, "When we deny the existence of these gifts or strengths and revel in our inferiority, we are engaging in self-deception rather than self-denial." And there's a big difference. Another thing that can affect our self-image, and parents, I want you to listen up. But a parent-child relationship can really affect a child's self-image. As parents, we can cause our children to have an inferior self-image. We can do this by repeated criticism, by causing shame and rejection. We can do it by telling a child that they're not as good as their siblings or other children in school. Why aren't you as good as your siblings? We can do it by telling a child that they will probably fail, not amount to anything. We can ridicule them, neglect them, or ignore a child and their accomplishments. We can set unrealistic standards and goals for them. We can do it if we in any way show indication that we feel that they are stupid, inadequate, or incompetent. And we don't even have to tell them, they can sense it, if that's how we feel. We can cause them to have an inferior self-image if we imply that a child is a nuisance. We can do it by avoiding expressions of love, hugs and kisses, especially in younger children. They need expressions of love and the touch of a parent, the touch of love. We can do it by controlling or dominating over them too much, where we don't allow them to do anything and we feel we have to control every part of their lives and they feel inadequate to do anything in life and they have an inferior self-image. We can do it by constantly nagging, sending them the message that what they are doing is always wrong. You see, it's important how we relate to our children. As parents, we can do the opposite. We can cause our children to have a superior self-image by how we relate to them. We can act like our child never does anything wrong. And when the teacher calls us up or pulls us aside and says, hey, your child is doing this, we want to work on this, and we can act like, no, our child would never do anything wrong. It must be someone else's problem. It must be other students. That's the problem. My child would never do something like that. Our children pick up on that. We can tell our children that they are better than their siblings or other children. We can tell a child that they can do anything if they set their minds to it. And again, we can have overprotection of them until they feel that nobody can hurt them. And it can give an elevated self-image in a child. And so we need to recognize that we are human and every parent will fail in these areas at times. And as I look over that list and I think about how I relate to my children and I see that I'm not always perfect. And you probably feel that as well with your children. But I think it's important that we relate to them in humility and we respond to failures in the right way. And we can guide them towards a proper self-image. I think another thing that can affect our self-image is experiences of failure or success in life. We can struggle with an inferior self-image when we fail in life. If we struggle financially, maybe you started a business and it failed, and your brother in the church seems like anything, he has five businesses and they all just take off, and whatever he does, it just goes. And suddenly you start to feel inferior. Sometimes we can struggle when we're on the slate at business meeting, but it seems like we never get elected. Or maybe you were in the lot for a minister and you weren't chosen. And we can struggle sometimes with that inferior self-image. Why wasn't I chosen? And we struggle with, what do people think of me? We can struggle with a superior self-image when we succeed in life. We can look down on those that aren't as successful as what we are. We can think that we are better, we're smarter, and stronger than others. I think we have to recognize that we all succeed and fail at times. You see, we tend to focus on our failures and other successes at times, and that makes us feel inferior. But my successes and failures in life don't change my value of who I am in God. And one last point here of how we can, what affects our self-image is setting our lives by a wrong standard. If we have a wrong standard, there are some lies that can formulate in our minds, such as, I have to meet other people's standards and expectations to be accepted and loved. And parents, we can do that. We can do that. We can teach our children that. We can believe lies like, when I fail to reach my goals and expectations or other people's goals and expectations, I should feel pressured, ashamed, or feel like a failure. Or we can believe lies like, if I don't succeed in whatever role or responsibility I am doing, whether it's in being a hostess and just having everything perfect, or maybe in our business or parent or teacher or whatever it is, that if I don't succeed in that, I am worthless and inadequate. Or another lie is that I should do whatever others expect me to do. These are all lies that will take us downhill very fast and have an improper self-image. And there may be more that you think of, but may God help us to see ourselves as He sees us, and to help us to see ourselves as we really are, not lifting ourselves up in pride or rejecting the gifts and abilities that God has given us. But we'll find a proper self-image if we focus on others and not ourselves. You see, the problem is too often we focus on ourselves. And I think that's why the Bible puts so much emphasis on serving others. The more we get our focus off of ourselves, the less we're going to struggle with this. A lot of our problems disappear when we focus on the needs of others and serving others. And our worth comes from loving God first and serving others second. May the Lord bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.